You're listening to Life in Deep Ellum's podcast.
Hey, friends. If you don't know me, this is Chris from the Cultural Center at Life in Deep Ellum. Well, it's another week. Another week here without you in this room. It's another week with me in front of the camera. And all I have to say is, I miss you guys. Before we get into today's sermon, I'm really excited about it, but it's greeting time. I want you to text the most hilarious GIF you can find to at least two or three of your friends. And yes, it is GIF, not JIF. Don't fight me. Well, I hope you got something to make you laugh or smile. I think we all need that a little bit right now. This week, we're continuing the discussion that we began last week. If you don't know, last week, Rachel and Joel spent some time talking about the recent protests in support of the Black community, in support of police reform. They also interviewed Shaquan and Whitney Lewis, who are members of this faith community here at Life in Deep Ellum. To continue this discussion, I want to spend some time talking about the importance of generous thinking. Specifically, I want to talk about how important it is to think generously and charitably about people who we disagree with. I also want to talk about why this is so hard to do and maybe one way that we can do it better. Last week, we interviewed Shaquan and Whitney, and this week, I want to interview a couple of people from our faith community that I think help embody the spirit of generous thinking. So, for starters, here's a big truth bomb that I'm sure you do not know. We live in an age of separation and division. I know, I can literally hear all of you saying, duh, through the camera lens. See, it's not just the recent protests and all of the debates on Facebook and Twitter that are going on right now. It's not just because of the 2008 or the 2012 or the 2016 elections. It's also not even the various fights for equality that have defined the American experience for the last however many hundreds of years. The separation from one another that we're experiencing is, I think, a part of normal human existence. Let me give you a personal example. Probably many of us have broken the golden rule of Facebook. Do you know what that rule is? Don't get into arguments online, especially with strangers. You see, every time I get sucked into a debate online, and this happens a little less frequently than it did a few years ago, I feel nothing but regret afterwards. I get all these negative emotions, right? I feel fear inside of me. I get that like rising tension in my chest. I feel anxious and maybe a little bit afraid and frustrated. You name it, all those negative emotions. But just last week, I broke that golden rule. I posted something on Facebook that was meant to be informative and not super, wasn't supposed to have a lot of tension in it. But there was someone that found that post and he made a comment on my Facebook page, someone that I didn't even know. This comment, I thought, was a little bit childish, a little bit ridiculous, a little bit thoughtless. And so in my pride, I pulled out the big guns. I told him he was being unreasonable. I told him that what he said was demonstrably false. I told him that there was evidence to prove why he was false. And at the end of my response, I got into snarky Chris mode, right? Snarky Chris mode is when I like to just do the little jab at the end to make you feel just a little bit less than. I said, you clearly have an internet connection and time on your hands. So why don't you go ahead and do the research? Now, don't get me wrong. I think that my position was still right. But the emotions that rose up in me were arrogance and pride. Basically, I thought this guy was a fool. And I used my words to do my best to make him feel that way. And to top it off, I got cheered on by friends and family, which made me feel even more superior. But I didn't even know who this guy was. I still don't know. I don't know him. And clearly, this is all a problem because I'm still thinking about it. I think this happens on basically all digital platforms because they don't provide a good way for us to treat each other well. When we don't have a human being in front of us, we can easily come to see our opponents as less than human, as less than worthy, as not having dignity. We lose the opportunity to know each other's stories, to humanize them, to think generously about them, and then to give them the benefit of the doubt. This happens offline too. When we lose sight of another person's humanity, that they grew up a certain way, that they're from a certain place, that they were raised with certain biases and blind spots, that they were taught certain things that you weren't taught, we lose the ability to make genuine connections. And we also lose the ability to think generously and be generous towards others. This theme of generosity is important, and it's woven throughout the Bible. Over and over again, all throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament, we see that God is a generous God. He's willing to continuously give gifts to humanity. And yet humans are often the opposite of generous. We're greedy with our resources because we don't trust that there will be enough for everyone. We want to get as much as we can for me and my people, my family, and take care of them, leaving everyone else to figure it out for themselves. You see, God gives out of abundance, but humans hoard out of a fear of scarcity. And this truth is indicative of a deeper truth about our own hearts. We're not generous with those who are outside of our circle because we view them as an enemy or as a potential enemy. Those who don't think or talk like us represent a threat to our livelihood and the way that we see the world. This is something that Jesus is very clear about in his Sermon on the Mount. Now, we still don't put Bibles on the screen, so if you have your Bible, I'd encourage you to turn to Matthew 5, verse 43. Will you read it with me? This is Jesus' words, red letters. He says, "You have heard that it was said, 'You shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy.' But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the just and the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet only your brothers, what more are you doing than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? You therefore must be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect." Now, if we read this correctly, it seems like Jesus is asking us to act in the opposite way that we would normally act. You see, we like uniformity. We like spending time with people who are like-minded. We like engaging with those kinds of people. We give the benefit of the doubt to our in-group, but not to the people outside of that group. And maybe that's our political party, Or maybe it's people with our same color skin. When Jesus says we must love our enemies so that we can be sons of our Father in heaven, he's making the point that if we want to reflect the image of God more clearly, we are supposed to be generous towards those that we might instinctively distrust. There's a simple truth in what Jesus is teaching us here. In order for us to be generous to our outsiders, we must first learn to think generously about our outsiders. And that can't just happen randomly. One way that we can do that is by opening ourselves up to the experience and stories of others. And to demonstrate this in a practical way, I want to talk about something that's near and dear to my heart, Diverse Lounge. Oh, Will and AP, thanks guys for coming to talk with me a little bit. Before we even get into this Diverse Lounge stuff, which I just mentioned, I'm hoping you guys can tell me a little bit about y'all's connection together. You said you told me a lawnmower story, and I want to hear that story.
You got to hear the lawnmower story. I've known AP for maybe 15 or so years, and I'm not the person who cuts my yard most frequently. And it was like summertime; the grass is super high, and I overthink cutting my yard. And my mower was down, and AP came by and was like, "Why is your yard always the highest grass in the whole street?" I said, "I don't know." And so one day after church, I left here actually at Life in Deep Ellum. I was going home. AP calls and is like, "Hey man, y'all hungry?" Yeah, we're hungry. Can we come by? Sure. Got Boston Market. Okay. Tell my wife. AP pulls up with his whole family, Boston Market for everybody, and takes a lawnmower out of the back of his car and starts mowing my yard in his church shoes.
A lawnmower.
A lawnmower.
In church shoes.
That's my brother right there. That's how I define our brotherhood. That's brotherhood right there.
Well, it's interesting that lawnmower story, it has a backstory to it. I really take pride in making my neighborhood look nice, and I think it makes people want to connect with you. So,
do you want to do the mic?
Yeah. The lawnmower was a gift from Joel Triska, because my lawnmower that I previously bought in initiative to build my credit was stolen by a crackhead that lived in my neighborhood. And a week after he stole it, I saw him down the street cutting the yard.
Oh, no. Oh, my goodness.
And I took a picture and sit at the wheel just to let him know, there's my lawnmower. Anyway, long story short.
I was like, go get your lawnmower. And you were like, no, it's his now.
Yeah, it's gone. Yeah,
because the thing was, I knew if I didn't go take the lawnmower back, he probably wasn't going to steal anybody else's, and he was going to make money with that lawnmower. So I just passed it on. It was like one of those things.
At least he was mowing with it.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? But what was interesting is it tore me up that week, and Joel had called. I don't even remember why he called. But I told him about, you know, me having... No, actually, I shared the story with Joel. And he's like, man. And he called me up like a week after I shared the story with him. And he was like, hey, man, I was thinking about you. Hey, man, what's your favorite beverage? I said, man, I love Red Stripe.
Yeah.
He's like, all right. Now, I'm thinking this was just a random call.
Yeah.
I'm at work at Creative Solutions, you know, working with the young people, making sure they get home. It's like around 4:50, close to getting off time.
Yeah.
Anyway, long story short, he shows up to SMU on Bishop Boulevard.
Yeah.
And he pulls in. He says, say, man, I was thinking about you, man. I know you had a hard week last week. I know you told me about your lawnmower, bro. And I just, hey, man, I just wanted to do something nice for you. So he gave me a six-pack of Red Stripe. I was like, man, I really appreciate it.
Love Joel Triska.
I thought that was it.
Such a Joel
move. No, man. There's more. What? There's more? And I turn around. He opened his trunk, and he has a lawnmower.
Yeah.
Bro. I was so happy.
Yeah.
And I had to contain myself, but I got the lawnmower, put it in my car, man. I went home that evening, cut my yard, a couple of more yards, and drank me some Red Stripe to kind of relax. So I was still on that high of having someone do something nice and kind for me.
Yeah.
And I didn't have to ask for it. It just happened. But they were listening with their heart.
Yeah.
And having someone listen with their heart and act in a gesture of kindness does something.
Yeah.
And I take notes from that. And I noticed my brother, Will, He didn't like to cut his yard.
Needed a little help on the lawn
and
mowing
front.
And
it was one of those Sundays where I felt like my family needed to socialize. So I asked my fam, come on, let's go over there. I'm finna surprise Uncle Will. I'm gonna cut his yard. We're gonna eat over there.
Yeah.
So we go over there, and that was my gesture of kindness. Just kind of bless everybody with a meal and to take the stress off his head. Yeah. Being the one guy on the block without the yard cut. So you know what I'm saying? I'm trying to show a little.
Thinking love. Generously.
I love it.
Yeah. Alejandro Perez.
That is good.
Joel Triska, six degrees of separation of mowing yards from Joel Triska.
Yeah, so there's this, like, I love that idea that, like, generosity from Joel begat more generosity from your perspective. So, and that's kind of what I'm talking
about.
Well,
and Joel surely would have been taught that as well, right?
Right.
That's what's beautiful is that we don't know where they come, but we just have to keep the flow going.
Yes, yeah, and, like, opening yourself up to community, I think, helps with that. So, so tell me a little bit. You guys are obviously very close. For those of you who don't know, at the gathering, Will and AP do something called Diverse Lounge. And Will, you've been doing this for 15, I think we just hit 15 years, right?
Yeah. And you know, what's been awesome about Diverse Lounge is it started as a little open mic, was spoken word poetry. Mm-hmm. The focus was on teenagers at the Dallas Theater Center. You know, when we first began, it was super intimate, had a little band, had some Starbucks, had a little, some art, and just a few kids came along. Our friend Darius had the first official club, the Diverse Lounge Club, where teenagers came from Carter High School. And here we are 15 years later, having been housed here in Life in Deep Ellum for the last 11 years in this wonderful partnership with Big Thought, who manages our clubs. We have 24 schools, after school clubs, 600 students.
Yeah.
And six times a year we gather here, 500, 600, 700 people, right? Mm-hmm. Free and open to the public. Huge band.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's amazing.
It's amazing. It's really amazing.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit more, like, why is Diverse Lounge important? What is it about Diverse Lounge that you find so compelling that you continue to come back? AP, I've seen you sing at Diverse Lounge at least a few times. So tell me about that.
Well, why is it so important? I want to make sure I'm answering this.
Mm-hmm.
It's important because it's a place where people don't have to put on masks.
Yeah.
And they can be themselves.
Yeah.
And they find agency through discovering their voice, utilizing all of the different offerings of art and creativity and expression.
Yeah.
And if you're not such an extrovert, a place to really listen and take in so many forms of expression.
Yeah.
You got the cypher room where they can go and they can dance and do their thing, or they can spit on the mic and spit their bars, the high 16.
We got some teenagers out there that can, like, really do some stuff. Yeah.
And then you got an area inside the art gallery where they can tactile create t-shirts, all kind of arts and crafts where they can make things with their hands and become makers and understand the spirit of makers.
Yeah.
And then, you know, those people who are intrigued by tattoos.
Yeah.
Get the little henna tattoos, get some decorative art on their bodies. And then you got an interactive chalk wall. And then when you come in, you got a place where people are groomed to listen to your voice.
Yeah.
And then we're growing up in an age where everything are in sound bites. But the reality is young people need elders to listen and elders need others to listen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we actually create an atmosphere where intergenerational expression becomes a collective listening exchange.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a constant rippling of heart, community, awakening. And you find that here at Diverse Lounge because we created it intentionally listening to the young people telling us what they needed.
Yeah.
But we also saw ourselves in them.
Yeah.
And we see the young people and the adults that come.
Yeah. So by opening yourself up to these people that would have been otherwise different from you, you would have thought of them differently.
Absolutely.
You start to see yourself in them a little bit. So I love
absolutely.
That.
Yeah. And the intergenerational part, I would say, is super literal for AP. I mean, his mother comes to almost every single show.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
All the way down.
I've seen her, like, dancing up here.
Yeah. His children and the little babies and now his grandson. Mm-hmm. You know, I know when I started it, I was thinking very intensely. My family's from Louisiana. Mm-hmm. One of my brothers was in middle school at the time, one was in high school.
Yeah.
So it was almost like I was trying to, like, you know, channel them and their spirit. So they don't make it physically here all the time for the shows, but it's definitely has the intentionality of the intergenerational kind of spirit.
Yeah.
And what I also love that AP said, you know, we talk about the power of voice all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, people who come know my voice has power to speak my truth and share my light.
Yeah.
But we absolutely set a culture of listening and we enrich that.
Yeah, you got the big respect the mic sign, right? Yeah, we close off the doors, like Life in Deep Ellum volunteers, when they're here, we'll close off the doors to make sure, you know, there's no noises coming in and out or people coming in and out while people are speaking. So I love that. So I want to talk a little bit about your You and I talked a little bit about your pedagogy, right? Like the way that you are teaching young people to interact with their own emotions and their own feelings. You mentioned something called emotional literacy, something called the trauma-informed educational space. Yep. So can you just talk a little bit about that and what that means?
Yeah, you know, for me, our work, if you cut right to it, is really to help in the mental health space and also addiction recovery space. Alejandro and I have 1,000 differences, and clearly we have like the skin pigmentation difference.
Yeah.
But we also have a shared Puerto Rican heritage. Mm-hmm. And in our story, my mother was from Puerto Rico, so I have my father's name, Will Ritchie. You can't really hear the name. Alejandro Perez Jr., his father was Puerto Rican. He has the Latino name.
Yeah.
But we had the shared experience of growing up, me in Louisiana and him in Texas, without like direct connection to those roots, right? And what happens when people are grow up without that kind of connection. So at Diverse, you know, when we talk about emotional literacy, we say, hey, you can see all the differences on our faces and our bodies, and I mean, even what's going on in our current climate right now in the States, right? Yeah. Which is only accentuated with the quarantine, because we can't get out and like connect and reconnect. So Diverse is a model of saying, hey, we don't want to talk about political propaganda, religious elitism. Mm-hmm. We don't want to talk about competition. This is not a slam poetry competition.
Yeah.
We want to bring you in here and allow your essence to shine, mm-hmm. right? And so we talked about this gift that Alejandro has about activating joy.
Yeah.
So our work has gone from, we've done assemblies for 500 preschoolers mm-hmm. all the way to 1,500 adults at a conference, right? We've done numerous elementary schools, and then we've been at Toyota Corporate and Southwest Airlines.
Yeah.
And I think the activate joy part is a huge deal because we do three things there. Mm-hmm. We activate joy, we invite depth, we offer reflection.
Yeah.
And that's our little template, whether it's a 45-minute workshop for our middle schoolers and how we kind of coach our Diverse Lounge teachers and artists to teach their class, or if it's a 3-hour Diverse Lounge.
Yeah.
And the activate joy part is so important.
Yeah.
Think about it, everybody out there, right? Like there's a lot of depth
that
the media offers. There's some reflection, usually just by the most articulate talking.
Just some takes or something,
But the joy part is really what I think we're missing, especially during quarantine.
Yeah.
And that's what we embody in all of our work.
Yeah. Yeah. And these, I think these spaces too, when you do that, when you start to activate joy, you also are able to open people up to an experience like somebody's dancing over here in the back of the room, right? Because they just love the music. And then all of a sudden, you know, you've got a teenager coming up and talking about something that's serious, you know, and maybe difficult, and they wouldn't otherwise be able to share. But I think that is a super helpful way to do that.
So piggybacking on what he said, he said activate joy, invite depth, and offer reflection.
Mm-hmm.
That's the formula to structure what we call safe space, which is structuring a fearless environment, socially practicing art, creating empathy.
Hold on a second. Repeat that for the people at home.
Yes. Okay. A little slower.
Good. I like that. Yeah.
Structuring a fearless environment.
Safe.
All right. Socially practicing art, creating empathy.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone in the safe space now feels open to feel and express and connect.
Yeah.
Because we use the formula to make the face,
the
space feel safe.
Yeah.
And it's intentional.
Yeah. I love that too, because there's a lot of talk about like safe spaces, right? And how maybe that's not such a good thing or whatever, but you're talking about it in a little bit more of a deeper way, right? Yeah. It's not just this like sanitized version of a safe space. Right. It's a real, we're dealing with real actual emotions that are going on.
Absolutely.
In
ourselves. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Love that. So I want to talk to you about another story you told me, and I think this gets at the heart of what Diverse is doing too a little bit. So you told me about a story. I think you were at your house at like 1 o'clock in the morning. Somebody walks down the neighborhood, right? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
This is just a couple days ago, 3 days ago.
Yeah.
You know, I walked AP out. He was leaving. You know, for the first like 8 weeks of quarantine, we didn't see each other at all. I think we might have even talked on the phone 2 or 3 times.
Yeah.
And so we're all kind of adjusting to how our wives are acclimating and, you know, our children are acclimating to what we should do or not do.
Yeah.
So here we are finally just kind of like connecting at each other's homes. And I walk him out to his car and here's a young African-American man walking down our street. And with camouflage pants, no shirt, backpack, and nonchalantly kind of comes up and says, hey, does one of you guys have a hot spot? I'm trying to get directions to go back home.
Yeah.
And I go, man, where's your shirt, man? And he was like, oh, it's in my bag. I was like, why is it in your bag? He's like, well, I'm about to walk back to my house at O'Connor and Rochelle. I'm like, O'Connor and Rochelle?
Yeah.
That's a 10-minute drive.
Yeah.
And he was like, yes, sir, I know. And I said, well, come on, man, we'll give you a ride. but put your shirt on first.
Yeah.
You know? And he put his shirt on, and it took 10 minutes to get there at 1 o'clock in the morning. But, you know, in our climate right now, you know, African-American kid walking around our neighborhood, you know, without a shirt on. I mean, it's just there's too much negative. There's too many negative images and negative assumptions about people right now.
Yeah.
We're in a very dangerous time because national media is projecting that on our country. And our country's 272 million people.
Yeah.
And there's way more light than dark.
Yeah.
And so AP kind of taught me how to like interact with people like that.
Yeah.
But so did my friend growing up who was like a big brother, Chris Brown, who would like talk to every person at Walmart, you know, like the people checking out and everything. I get so embarrassed.
Yeah.
And he taught me, just engage with people. Just engage with people. And that's what we did with the boy the other day.
Yeah. So, and you mentioned too, there's this idea of like, you can put your guard up, right? Or you can let your guard down when you encounter somebody that you are maybe unfamiliar with. And I just love that. I love that idea. I love that, you know, I think that that's part of the spirit of diverse, right? Where you are more interested in maybe having a conversation and looking somebody in the eye and saying, hey, man, what's going on? Hey, how you doing? You know, you could have totally been like, nah, man, I'm not going to do that for you. You know, I think there's a difference there. So, I have a question for you. Why should someone who maybe hasn't had the diverse experience before, and particularly I'm talking about adults at the gathering or whatever, of course, teens or whatever too, but, you know, why should an adult who's not experienced with this kind of thing, why should they come experience it? What's in it for them?
Well, it offers them a lens into microcosmic pieces of their own lives and other people.
Yeah.
It gives them an opportunity to see stories being truly respected. It gives them an opportunity to practice reverence without judgment.
Yeah.
It invites them to receive.
Yeah.
And when you pour into other people, you're actually sowing into their lives. And no matter whose story you hear, you're going to always find a piece of your life or a thought in the story that's going to make you reflect about your own.
Yeah.
I think that in and of itself is enough, but there's so much more.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and one of the quotes you said you resonated with when we spoke is, when I share my joy, I multiply my happiness. When I share my pain, I divide my sadness. And when I embrace the two, I become whole.
Yeah.
We become whole. You know, the thing about this event is that there would not be 500, 600, 700 people here if it was only adults on the microphone. So if we haven't made ourselves clear so far, on stage, there's a band playing, there's a live painter, live scribe, but 90% of the people who read an original piece of work are teenagers.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're younger, you know, but we're going for that teenage range, right? That almost kind of like where you can very much get lost, right? In elementary school, there's 1,000 activities. In middle school, there's quite a few. In high school, if you're not a basketball player in band or in scouts, or you already have, you know, your own identity, you can really get lost.
Yeah.
And so that innocence of their voice, right, that's not supercharged to project whatever hot topic is in the media, again, gives that essence. And so it doesn't matter if you're 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years old. I know people who are 60-year-old couples who come to every single show because they are listening to something that they resonate with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not always easy to hear at all.
Yeah,
a lot
absolutely.
Of it's really hard.
Yeah.
But we grow up hearing that the phrase, it takes a village to raise a child.
Yeah.
At Diverse Lounge is proof that it also takes one to support an adult.
Yeah.
And I think a good church community does that, right?
Yeah, I agree.
Think a good family system does that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't run away. You can't control the good and bad in your family tree, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the Bible is such an example,
right?
You have to, whether you want to call it yin yang, east, west, you're going to have those hard times, hard spots, right? And we grew up in an achieving way sometimes, I think, in America, like looking at Jesus as if we're trying to achieve him.
Yeah.
And Jesus is just saying, just breathe.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's good.
And I think that Alejandro has been a model for that with me. And, you know, as long as Joel Trisco keeps buying
people lawnmowers. Yeah.
You know, buying mowers, right. And doesn't hide from a six-pack of Red Stripe, which I've been known to partake, you know, we can keep doing good work for the youth.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. So one last question for both of you. What is one thing that someone who's watching this video, maybe never been to Diverse or whatever, what's one thing that they can do like tactilely right now in their lives to bring the spirit of Diverse into their own personal, maybe it's their personal sphere, maybe it's their family, maybe it's their community or neighborhood. What can somebody do?
Here's some things that I do.
Microphone.
In my home. I always move, whether it's dancing or exercise. That's one of the things that I do. Another thing is I'm always singing.
Yeah.
I mean, I could be talking to my children. I will make up a song about them having to clean up what they need to clean up,
yeah.
how they need to clean it up, so that they don't have to be agitated about me fussing about mm-hmm. things. But it's just me being comical and using my gift to kind of invite my child to do what they know they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
But I'm using my gifts to invite them to do it, as opposed to being this forceful, authoritative figure making yeah. them have to do what they need to do. And another thing you can do is just listen to each other.
Yeah.
Talk to each other and listen to each other.
Yeah.
We need conversation more than anything right now.
Absolutely.
This engagement is the last thing anyone needs when we've been locked up in our houses for like 3 months.
Yes.
So
yeah.
listen.
Yeah.
Well, there's no support like peer-to-peer support.
Yeah.
We got that from Joe Powell and the Drug and Alcohol Recovery movement.
Yeah.
And love is an action that transforms pain into purpose, which is something AP says.
Say that again.
Love is an action that transforms pain into purpose. So some of the things that we can do right now is when we have our mask on, make sure to make genuine eye contact with the people you see.
Yeah, really you smile know, with your eyes.
Really smile.
yeah.
We are lacking a physical empathy right now of mm-hmm. presence.
Yeah.
And we're normally saying like Michael Jordan has a presence or, you know, Jennifer Lopez has a presence. We all have a presence. And even in the grocery aisle, we can make eye contact, just do that more often. Say yeah. hello in the grocery aisle more often. You know, like if you don't feel comfortable picking things up after folks, find ways where you can engage and say hello to them.
Yeah.
Especially if they look different than you, if they sound different than you, right? Yeah. Because we're all walking around with masks on and yeah. we have to find a way to bring back that natural physical empathy.
Yeah.
Because that culture of fear is going to want to keep us from shaking hands and hugging for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
But let's go step by step. And when you see someone like the young man we saw in the neighborhood, that was just a small example.
Yeah.
Just engage.
Yeah.
And engage with your neighbors.
Yeah.
You know, so many people have said they're getting to know their neighbors more than ever. So just be, I would say be open, because when we lead with our heart and not with our brain,
yeah.
because our brain brings caution.
Yeah.
Our heart brings openness.
Yeah.
It may get hit every once in a while,
yeah.
but just trust that your heart is going to bring you to a better place with others.
Oh, I love it, man. You just said something too. So you said, we're all walking around with masks on, right? That's not just during quarantine.
That's right.
Where yeah. we're all already walking around with masks on. And so I think, you know, this idea of like humanizing people, right? And engaging with them leads to that ability, I think, to think generously about people and then to be generous with them too. So I appreciate you guys. Thanks so much.
Chris. Appreciate
thanks
it.
Yeah, thanks for coming. Thinking generously about others is hard, friends, but it is possible. Generosity is at the heart of how God relates to the world, to human beings, to you and me. And this generosity is what we are called by Jesus to reflect in the Gospels. Before we can think generously about others, we must expose ourselves to the stories and the experience of outsiders, of our outsiders. It seems to me that when we feel like deep division exists in our communities, in our cities, in our country, we have a couple of choices. One, we can dig in our heels and be prideful. We can assume that we know everything that we need to know about those who are different from us, and we can avoid close contact with them and avoid listening to their stories. Or two, we can choose humility. Assume that our knowledge and our perspectives are limited. Listen to and engage with those who are different from us. This need for humility is why Joel spent some time talking about the 5 conversions of Richard Rohr last week. If you don't remember, these conversions are what we must go through if we want to learn solidarity with the poor and the marginalized. The first conversion that Richard Rohr talks about is simply having basic compassion. To me, the best way to do that, to learn that, is to start to spend time with those who are different from us, listening and learning so that we can transform and grow in solidarity. And as we grow in solidarity, we can grow in the ability to think generously. And as we grow in that, we can learn how to be generous. Here's how Father Rohr says it. Far too many seem to think, even if to themselves, that if those people would simply work a little more, do things the right way, change their minds, stay hidden, or just pray a little harder, we'd all be better off. The first conversion is where we must begin. Our hearts must be softened, and we must experience basic sympathy, empathy, and recognition of another's pain. This is why I think the work that Will and AP are doing at Diverse Lounge is so important. It provides a space for people to learn how to build solidarity by learning to recognize the joy and the pain in others. We live in a sort of flashpoint of division right now. There's no question about it. Things feel different in 2020 than they did in 2019 or 2016 or 2012. But the reality is, the division that we're experiencing is a symptom of something deeper in the human experience. If we let our natural tendencies guide us, we view those different from us as hostile and as potential enemies. But this is against the grain of God's very good and generous nature. When we trust that God has been truly generous with us, we are freed to act generously towards others. And that starts with opening ourselves up to those experiences and those stories of people who are different from us. I hope and pray that you and I will walk away today encouraged to be open and generous, to think generously. And so now I'll close with a benediction. May the grace of the Lord Jesus Christ and the love of God and the fellowship of the Holy Spirit be with you all. I love you guys. Blessings.